from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, in today for Michael Krasny. San Jose may be the biggest city in the Bay Area, but it doesn't have a downtown to match. One of the reasons is that downtown San Jose isn't the job center that downtowns are in both San Francisco or Oakland. And there are other challenges as well, from how to speed up mass transit to how to sustain a more vibrant street life. A new report out last week offers a blueprint for creating a more vibrant downtown San Jose. We'll talk about what it involves and what it might mean for the city and the rest of the Bay Area after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, in today for Michael Krasny. When you think about the future of downtown San Jose, you have to start with certain facts that literally pull the city in different directions. It's the Bay Area's biggest city, of course, but not just in population, also in footprint. At 175 square miles, it's more than three times the size of San Francisco. But then the opposite is true when you consider jobs. Downtown San Francisco is home to over 300,000 jobs. San Jose, just under 40,000. So how do you create a vibrant downtown when jobs are spread across a much larger landscape? Part of the answer may be in redefining what we think of as downtown. In 2011, the city approved a plan called Envision 2040, which embraced the idea of various urban villages. And last week, SPUR, the Bay Area Urban Planning Think Tank, released a new report outlining how it thinks San Jose can reach its urban potential. And that's our focus in this hour of Forum, the future of downtown San Jose. Joining us, Egon Terplin. He's the regional planning director for SPUR. Good morning.
Good morning.
Joining us as well is Kim Wallace. She's the Director of Economic Development and Chief Strategist for the City of San Jose. Wonderful title, Chief Strategist. Welcome, Kim Wallace.
Thank you. Good morning.
Happy to have you join us. Joe Horbital joins us as well. He's Deputy City Manager for San Jose, formerly the Director of Planning, Building, and Code Enforcement. Joe Horbital, thanks for being with us as well.
Glad to be here, Dave.
So I'd like to begin by asking you to describe San Jose. And it seems like sort of an easy, superficial question in a way. But in some ways, I think, Egon Terplin, it gets at the heart of this particular question. So play a little word association with me. When I say downtown San Jose, you say?
I say the urban center of Silicon Valley. This is the place, this is the most urban neighborhood in an area that we've called Silicon Valley, but Silicon Valley increasingly is an idea. But we have a place, we have a city of San Jose, and downtown San Jose is really the most urban place with the greatest potential to grow in all of the South Bay.
And it's the challenge to make the place reflect the idea that you have a physical space that is connected to this center of innovation.
I think the challenge in part is that so many of the great experiments in urban downtown revitalization have been done in downtown San Jose, and now it's to really fill it with people. To make it a place that people who live in the South Bay, people who live in the rest of the Bay Area, choose to go to on a regular basis, whether it's for a job, whether it's a choice to live in that environment, or whether it's a choice to go there for entertainment. Increasingly, it becomes a place that people choose to go to.
Kim Wallace, give me your word association for that question of describing downtown San Jose.
Ambitious, increasingly important, surging, I would say surging ahead with tech companies and residents in the last several years.
And Joe Horbital, same question.
I would say it's accessible and comfortable. It is a major urban area that really is approachable. I think of San Jose as the large small town. So it's the place where you bump into people that you know from around the city and the region. Hmm.
So let's pick up on that part of this description, because you each said very interesting things about it, ranging from ambitious to this center, urban center of Silicon Valley, to that it's in part a small town. You say in the beginning of your report, Egon, that it's San Jose is kind of betwixt and between, that it's neither small enough to navigate easily nor large enough to draw crowds on a regular basis. Is that sort of the dilemma, that it is what Joe is saying? It's small, you can bump into people, but you can't bump into them, I guess, often enough.
I think part of the issue is downtown San Jose fills with people from time to time. And anyone who's been there for a Sharks game or who's been there for a major event, the Jazz Fest, sees the downtown full of life, realizing its potential. But that's episodic. And so the notion of it being not quite big enough is you can't go there at any one moment and know it's going to be full of life. But increasingly, and Kim, you know, mentioned this of being kind of surging, there's a few places where we know that's happening.
And where, Kim, is that happening? Where is the surge, as you put it, taking place?
Well, the San Pedro market in the San Pedro district has been a big hit just in the last year and a half. It's a San Jose version of the Ferry Building, if you will, and that is a key place downtown where you can go any day of the week, any time of day, and you're going to find all sorts of people there. A second area I would mention is the Paseo de San Antonio, which is this lovely, you know, fully leased up walking corridor from San Jose State, a university of 30,000 students right in downtown San Jose. It's an easy, fun, cafe-lined walk right to Cesar Chavez Park, smack dab in the center of downtown San Jose. The SOFA, the Creative District, is also really going strong with the South First Friday Art Walk and a growing concentration of galleries, cultural venues, and creative industries.
And by the way, if you're listening to this program and are curious about some of the places that Kim just mentioned, we've got a number of maps from the Spur Report, figures from the Spur Report, where you can look at some of these areas, including one that sort of sketches out all of these different parts of downtown. But as I hear that description, Kim Wallace, it also sounds like they're not exactly connected. Is that part of what San Jose has to do that's a bit different than what you would do in many other urban areas, that these are – you have to have, in a sense, many little downtowns as opposed to one big downtown?
Yeah, San Jose is downtown is not just a single commercial main street. It's actually a – substantial size city center. And you're absolutely right. Our challenge is to connect these lovely, beautiful, small places so that people can walk from one to the next and really sort of stumble on the fun. The first wave of development led by our redevelopment agency was all about the big deals. For decades, we focused on hotels, convention center, the SAP center, the cultural institutions. Now we're very much focused on the street life, the activation, the uses of our beautiful public spaces, and the connectivity between all of that, especially for the walker, the pedestrian.
So how do you do that? Joe Horwittle, first on that. How do you make it easier to sort of get from one of these little centers to another?
Well, part of it is, as we're doing new buildings in the city, is making sure that we're putting retail in the right places and not putting parking garages in the wrong places, that we're thinking about the public right-of-way itself, the streets, that they really are conducive to pedestrians. And I think the redevelopment agency did that in a large amount of downtown. But like the San Pedro urban market area that Kim talked about, to get between the convention center and that district, even though it's four blocks away, it is totally unknown because of there is not a straight path to get there. The streets haven't been really upgraded for pedestrians, so it's, you know, you're homesteading a bit to get there.
So, again, as you look at that particular design challenge, let's focus in on that a bit. How do you work on that problem so that it is easier to get from A to B, that it's more walkable, that you take advantage of a lot of people bicycling in that region, that sort of thing?
Well, we really honed in on a couple of key strategies we think are important for San Jose to pursue, and some of them are happening now. We've talked about the pedestrian improvements, and some of that are very simple things. Every crosswalk you get to, you don't need to push the button. It automatically turns so that you can cross the street without having to push the button for it to happen. Some of it's illumination that the city's working on, making sure that the sidewalks are generous and have plenty of space to go on. But when it comes to new buildings, this is a key thing that we've noted, that there are two very simple features to urban design that we wanted to push. One was tall ceilings on the ground floor so that you can have the retail space, so you can have the generous environment that people want to experience, but then also active uses all around a building.
What does that mean, active uses
all
around a building?
So having windows onto a potential retail space, having residents that might be a walk-up that they could go to their residential unit, not having it ringed with a parking garage, maybe with a grill looking in, that's not something that you would want to walk by.
Is there too much parking? Is that part of the problem, that it's in some ways in an urban area, you want driving to be a pain in the neck, right, as opposed to having it be easy?
Well, for a downtown in a city, you want to make it easy to get to. One of the challenges in downtown San Jose, though, is that there is a minimum parking requirement, and a lot of buildings, also for the market reason, are self-parked, meaning they build enough parking for all the people to come to that building, to arrive at the building and stay within it. We want to make sure that people can arrive in downtown, go to a parking garage if they need to, and then walk to their particular destination.
Kim Walsh, how do you respond to the Spur report idea that to make parking a bit harder, as I understand it at least, to have fewer incentives to park downtown? That's not something that people, particularly in California, take kindly to most often.
Yeah, it's a direction we're very committed to go in as a city. San Jose's 30-year growth plan has us being extraordinarily welcoming of growth, but really wanting to be a model of growing that economy and homes in the right places along the transit infrastructure. So we have a goal of going from 80% driving alone to 40% driving alone in 30 years. And we need to recognize that that's going to happen over time. And it's going to start in the downtown and central San Jose, which is an extraordinarily transit-rich environment already, with more to come.
Yeah, I want to get to all of that because that is key to all of this. But let me also ask you, Kim, about something that I just was sort of circumstantial. But when I was reading up on this last night on the sidebar to the article I was reading about this topic was a little piece about how the city was trying to attract the San Jose Mercury newspaper back down to downtown by offering parking incentives. It seemed sort of counterintuitive, well, not counterintuitive, but contradictory, I guess, to perhaps what we're describing this morning.
Yes, it's really an element of this transition. So downtown has had a parking incentive program for new leases downtown in our city garages. Well, we'll give them 50% off for the first 4 years. And what that does is it convinces them to give downtown a try. And then once they're downtown, companies are finding that a growing percentage of their workforce uses transit, bikes, walks to work, and that they actually need less parking. And we also have over 25,000 private parking spaces downtown, so there's plenty of parking. But in this transition period, we've tried to use our public parking garage as an asset to get more and more companies, including hopefully the Mercury News headquarters, to locate in the heart of the city and give it a try. Most of these companies are still coming from a suburban mindset and environment.
Well, that's an interesting part of this too, the sort of suburban centers, because if you think of not only the Merc, but so many other, if you think of the image, Joe Horwittle, of Silicon Valley, you think about Google, well, it's in Mountain View. You think about Apple, well, it's in Cupertino. Facebook, it's in Menlo Park. The HP, Palo Alto. Everything is sort of sprinkled around. Samsung, which is building, and it sounds like an exciting new building, but that's in North San Jose. So that's a challenge as well, right?
Well, it is and it isn't. Adobe is downtown with their world headquarters in three towers, and have been very happy choosing downtown, moving out of Mountain View years ago. But the other reality is Silicon Valley does need to grow up, and just being spread out all over the place doesn't work. And so I think the next generation is what Samsung did, which is to build dense, but on transit and where we've got other services and residential around it. So, you know, it's kind of a suburban downtown model, which, you know, it's its own set of drama. But I think, you know, companies are downtown. We've got a number of tech companies that have chosen downtown to start growing.
So Egon, is the challenge sort of described in its largest sense? That, I mean, you're not going to shrink the city. You're not going to reduce the boundaries of San Jose. It is what it is. So it's going to be in these different spots. And so do you have to then sort of focus on how it grows in those areas so it's denser in these scattered locations and then connect the dots so that it's easier to get from each of them?
Absolutely. I think we acknowledge, and everyone acknowledges, Silicon Valley, in fact, the Bay Area writ large, has many centers. And part of what's exciting in the moment we're in right now is we're connecting those centers in a new way. And I know we're going to get to transit in a moment, but this long-held dream of quote-unquote ringing BART around the bay, it's happening. Now, BART's not coming up the peninsula from San Jose to the north, but it's coming down the East Bay. And so these multiple centers of the large cities are being connected throughout their downtowns. But also, as Joe mentioned, around North San Jose, there's already transit going from downtown San Jose straight up past the new Samsung building that's being built to where the Cisco campus is. So if we think about a Silicon Valley or a South Bay or San Jose in a couple of decades, you will be able to go from downtown, hop on a bus, a fast bus out to Santana Row, hop on a light rail that'll be much faster up to North San Jose.
But the challenge of making transit work is that, I think, Kim Wallace, is that it's got to be easy for people and it's got to be reliable and it's got to happen all the time. I mean, because if it's a pain, if you got to wait, you're not going to do it. So, and it's got to be quick, right? Just like, you know, the subways in New York. So how do you do that? Do you have to make everything go faster in part?
Yeah, it's both. Finish the infrastructure, connect it, and make it go faster. So there are actually 380,000 jobs in San Jose, and only 10% of those, 38,000, in the downtown. And many of them are in this North San Jose area, which is one of the largest concentrations of technology companies anywhere in the world, but extends all the way from the airport up to Highway 237. So really central to San Jose being able to welcome a lot of growth is about connecting the infrastructure that's here, the Caltrain, the commuter rails, the express buses, the light rail, adding in bus rapid transit, BART, and ultimately high-speed rail, and then working the connections among the transit and between the transit and the cycling and the walking infrastructure. That is our work over the next 30 years, and we intend to be a model in making that work, transitioning from a suburban area and way of getting around to a more urban area with a much greater variety of ways that people are going to move around during the week.
Kim Wallace, Director of Economic Development, Chief Strategist for the City of San Jose, joining us along with Joe Horbital, Deputy City Manager for the city, and Egon Terplin, who's the Regional Planning Director for SPUR, the Bay Area Urban Think Tank. We'd like to hear from you as well. We're going to open up our phone lines. 866-733-6786 is our number. If you live in San Jose, how would you like to see the city grow and develop? What's the picture you would paint of the ideal downtown San Jose? What are some of the challenges you see? If you don't go to downtown San Jose, why not? What is it that would make it more attractive? We'd love to hear from you. You can also post your thoughts on our website or email them to us here at kqed.org. Lots of comments coming in already on the web. Read some in just a moment. But let's stay with this question of transportation for a moment, Egon. That's not a cheap proposition, right? How, given the challenges all cities always have, what's the easiest way to speed that up? How do you make light rail in San Jose, for example, faster without spending buckets of money?
Well, one of the interesting things with transit that people don't always understand, if you run it faster, you save money. And you save money because you can run the same amount of, you can run more transit for the same amount of money.
So why don't we do it?
Well, we are doing it in many ways, but it takes a number of steps to make it work. One of the big keys in San Jose, we talk a lot about light rail, and there's some key changes, and we propose a couple of them that could relate to running the trains faster. Right now they're on the sidewalk, but you could imagine double-tracking First Street so they could run much faster through downtown. But many more people ride the bus in the South Bay than are on the light rail system. And so Kim mentioned bus rapid transit, and they just broke ground on a new bus rapid transit line that will come in from the east to downtown. And there's several more lines being planned up to the north and further out to the west. And those could really be game changers because those are some of them, they're going to have, in part of it, a dedicated right-of-way in the middle of the street to be able to operate much more quickly.
Joe Horbital, Liz from San Jose writes, I avoid downtown because the light rail tracks are counterintuitive, poorly marked, and therefore dangerous, especially after having almost driven down the rail path itself by mistake. There's an article years ago about the light rail drivers that are in perpetual fear that they'll actually wind up killing someone someday. Is it that? Is the system that problematic right now?
I don't think so, but I think there are some things that we can do differently, and that's in the SPUR report to even look at just running them on First Street and taking them off of Second Street. It is one that we created giant sidewalks, and the tracks are literally flush with that. So So it is, you know, if you're a driver not paying attention, you know, sometimes people do drive down the tracks rather than down the street.
And do you have to also, Kimolish, do more to sort of connect all these things with BART coming to San Jose? It's not coming, though, all the way to downtown, right? So is that part of what has to happen so that Caltrain, BART, light rail, bus, that there's ease of access and transfer between all of them?
Yeah, absolutely. And the center for that is really the Dearden Transit Center, which is right at
the Caltrain stop.
Yeah, right near the SAP Center. BART is critical in the long term. BART will be coming to San Jose starting in 2017 to Berryessa. There will be rapid bus service from that Berryessa BART station into downtown. And then we're targeting federal approval to bring BART into downtown San Jose, underground. Ideally, we get that approval in 2016. We start construction in 2018. And 10 years from now, we have passenger service, if all goes well.
Bringing do you have BART the money to do that?
We're working on it. Bringing BART into downtown San Jose is one of the two top Bay Area priorities that MTC has set for the federal New Starts program. So
that's the Metropolitan Transit Commission. Do you agree with that, Egon, that that's crucial to get BART to downtown?
BART is crucial to connect up to the East Bay, absolutely. But the other piece of it that actually is happening and the funding is there is to electrify Caltrain. And what's crucial about that is Caltrain already does come to San Jose, to downtown, to Dearden Station. But with the electrified trains, you can run them much more frequently and they run much more quickly. So one of the recommendations we make in our report is right now the very popular service is the baby bullet train, which makes just a few stops, and it's 60 minutes San Francisco to San Jose. Well, imagine with electrified train if you could drop that down to 50 minutes, 45 minutes potentially, as a precursor to high-speed rail, which is really would then make the trip 30 minutes. But to really test out to shrink that distance between the two major centers, and that one is fully funded to do the electrification. We don't have the money for all the cars yet, but that's happening.
Let's take a first call, and we'll get to much more after our break, but let's squeeze in one before we take our break. Mario in San Jose wants to join us. Mario, go ahead, please.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for having me on the show. I'm actually calling because I've lived downtown for 9 years. I grew up in San Jose. I love this area. I myself am a biker, so I drive to work in the morning, but when I want to go get drinks and such, dinner after work, I ride my bike. A lot of my friends who grew up in San Jose don't actually come downtown due to the fact of the parking restrictions. Not only the private parking, the limitation of private parking and the expense, but also the ability to leave your car overnight, say overnight, or if you wanted to actually leave your car in a parking garage, it's not possible. That's probably the number one comment that I received from all of my friends who grew up in the area and why they don't come downtown.
Mario, thank you. Let's get a quick response from Kim before we go to our break. But Kim, part of what you want people to be able to do, right, is to drive downtown and then leave their car behind, basically, and do what Mario does, bike around, walk around.
Right. It's really key, this park once strategy. There's plenty of parking. People in the South Bay, shall we say, aren't as used to paying for parking as much as people in San Francisco or other big cities. And so we've tried to keep the cost relatively low. And then we aim to be the most bike-friendly place in the Bay Area. And we're pretty close to being there with the buffered green bike lanes. And we've done a lot of downtown streets have been put on road diets. So there's tons of bike lanes and the bike share program and really trying to attract people like Mario to bike to and around downtown.
We'll pick up on this when we return. We have to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about how all of this gets hooked together, both in terms of transit, but also how jobs need to be focused around those transit hubs if all of this is going to work as these three guests of ours today would like to see. And of course, everyone in San Jose would like to see as well. Here's the numbers if you want to join us after our break. 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts on our website as well. What would you like to see happen in San Jose? What would draw you there? We'll come back to that after this. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson in today for Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about downtown San Jose, what it could become, what the challenges are in this city that is so large geographically as well as its population. There are really, in many ways, many downtowns. And how can those be linked together? What can be done to make that a vibrant and functioning area? What else could be done to also develop jobs in the downtown area as well? We're joined by Egon Terplin, who's the Regional Planning Director for SPUR, the Bay Area Urban Think Tank, Kim Wallace, Director of Economic Development and Chief Strategist for the City of San Jose, and Joe Horwittle, who is the Deputy City Manager. We'd like you to join us, too, 866-733-6786. I want to get back to we'll get back to all of our calls in just one moment. But, again, pick up on one thing that we haven't really made a link, since this is a show in many ways about linkages, and that's the link between transit and jobs. Because in your report, you suggest that while you'd like to have everyone come downtown, what you really want to do is reserve key places adjacent to these transit hubs for job creators.
Most people don't understand that most transit ridership is actually people going to and from work. So to get lots of people on transit, the key ingredient is lots of jobs right at the end of your trip. Get off the train, get off the bus, and your job is close.
So you don't have the proverbial last mile problem. It's
exactly.
Not a pain in the neck to get from the train station to your work.
And the Bay Area has a lot of last mile, last couple of mile challenges. So in downtown San Jose, what we were very, in our report, arguing we ought to embrace the market, encourage growth to happen, but just those areas right around the future BART stations and the current Caltrain, which is one and the same around Diridon, to reserve those sites for jobs or the big parcels, to make sure that there's enough capacity over the long run to have lots of jobs in downtown.
So big employers as opposed to what would you say shouldn't go next to Diridon train station?
Well, I think the main use is housing, because housing and transit lingo is an origin. It's not a destination. People leave their house to go somewhere else. But a destination could be a job, it could be a hotel, it could be retail, it could be a higher education, a university that wants to come downtown, but a place that draws people, that creates lots of trips.
Do you agree with that, Joe Horwittle, that you should reserve spaces for jobs as opposed to other urban uses?
Generally, yes. Our general plan looked at the role of BART and high-speed rail and commuter rail, that those are places to import workers into San Jose. And light rail and bus is really a way to move people around that are already here. So we've really built that into our strategies. I think the push point is really in downtown, where we allow housing and office uses to occur on the same property, basically by right. And we've had an internal debate about, should we allow housing to happen on certain streets? And SPUR raises the same issues in their report. I think where the city has been is right now we have a crane in the air with a couple hundred apartment units under construction on one of those sites that we had that debate. We think putting housing downtown was a more important decision at that point, but it's one that I think we need to grapple with from time to time.
Where are you at with that challenge, Kim Wallace, about balancing housing versus job creation in the downtown? And where are developers at with that? There must be some tension around that point.
Well, to get people downtown, as the SPUR report calls for, we need both people to live here and we need companies here. And there'll be a trade-off for that in different places in the real estate cycle. And right now, housing is really hot. There are over 2,000 housing units in the pipeline and two projects under construction, as Joe said. So nonetheless, there are key sites that are going to be better for high-rise offices, and we expect to have demand for that shortly. And the Diridon site, right next to the Diridon station and the SAP Center, is planned for high-rise office. It is the high-rise office site that is right on Caltrain, and that is the plan, and we will be waiting until the time is right and hopefully approve a significant new development there of high-rise office with retail and then surrounded by the housing that's in the area right on Caltrain. It's a terrific site in the long term.
And that sort of would bring everything together in some ways, right, Egon? Because you have the train station, if you had job developers, you have the SAP Center, people go there for entertainment, sharks, whatever. Then you've got sort of everything kind of combining up in the right way.
Absolutely. And that's the experience now. You get off and the kind of activity of downtown is just a little further away on the other side of the freeway. But as Kim's describing, holding out and making sure that we could have that intense office development, major employer right there with the other pieces around it is really what's what the vision is.
Adriana wants to get us to a different point, and we welcome your call. Adriana, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I've been listening to the program, and I grew up in San Jose. I ended up coming up to San Francisco for school, and the whole time I'm just sitting listening to this program, and I'm wondering and I'm asking, have any of you been out on a Friday or Saturday night? I mean, it is not a safe place to go out. And I've gone out in high school, coming back to visit in college, and now out of college, and it's just not a safe place. I mean, you do see a police presence, which you would imagine would be reassuring, but for some reason, it makes people really nervous and I think act out. You know, I've had numerous friends who have been, you know, hurt downtown San Jose. I had one friend who was stabbed at Tres Gringos, almost lost his life. And so, you know, I'm just left wondering, it's great to have all these thoughts about, you know, building up San Jose and, you know, it's great to have all these retail spaces and bring in transportation, but what's the point if people don't feel safe going out, like, on a weekend when you want customers and when you want, you know, to expand growth for, you know, San Jose? And I'll just take my answer.
Yeah, no, well, before you go off the air, Adriana, because it's a great question, just tell me, do you feel safer in San Francisco?
Yes. I mean, maybe not Tenderloin at 3 in the morning, but, I mean, the Mission downtown, like, I mean, I've stayed in San Francisco for numerous reasons, and one of those reasons is safety.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thanks for raising this. Important point. Joe Horwittle.
Well, I think it is a challenge we had a number of years ago, and we did a couple of things to really address that. One is that we looked at the types of clubs that were in downtown and bringing a lot more live music in, and kind of changing who was coming downtown, because we were had folks coming from the Bay Area that really didn't need to be here. So we really worked on that. We also worked on how we police downtown. We've made tremendous strides in how the policing is working downtown, about being out there and available for the residents and the customers downtown, the property business improvement district we've got, his added streets teams down to really make sure that we're putting forward a great environment for the people who are coming downtown.
You know. Let's, Kim, you wanted to join in?
Yes, and the issue Adriana raised is really one of perception. I live and work downtown, and I know the facts, and the facts are that downtown San Jose is significantly safer than San Francisco, L.A., Oakland, San Diego, other big cities. Yet there is this perception that it's not as safe as people would like to be, would like it to be. But it's really just, it's not grounded in the data and the facts. So the key issue is what's going to make people feel safer walking around downtown at any time of day is the presence of other people and other people like them. And that's really what we need to work on.
So it's not, in your point of view, it's not so much presence of police, of just presence. I mean, the more vibrant there is a life there is on the street, the more people that are around, the safer people feel.
Exactly. And that makes sense.
Mark wants to push on this topic, though, some too. So let's go to our next caller. Mark, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I lived in San Jose for 30 years, and I think some of the things that are happening, like BART, the Santa Clara Corridor bus project, a lot of really good things are happening, but the fight that the mayor and city council stick with the police department has caused, unfortunately, and I have to absolutely contradict what the other speaker just said, it's a much less safe place than it was 3 years ago. We have much less police presence. We have much less enforcement, police say. They can't prevent crime. They can only respond to it. And it's true. And if you look at the number of officers there were 3 years ago before this all started and the number that are there now, the number that quit and they're trying to replace with rookie cops, it's really a travesty. We've gone from one of the safest cities in the country to one that is much less safe.
Mark, let me hold you there, because let's just spend a beat more on this and be as clear as we can about what we know and what the facts are. It is true, Kim Wallace, that there has been this ongoing debate and struggle in San Jose over the size of the police department and the number of cops on the street. That's certainly a fact. Sounds like you're saying, though, that the other fact is that despite whatever the size of the police force, you're saying it's still a safe city.
I think both are true. It is still a safe city if you compare us to other big cities in the Bay Area, statewide and nationally. But at the same time, we know we need to add back police and strengthen our force. We have an underlying problem, and that is San Jose does not have the tax base the city our size needs. And that is a function of having a lot of low-density housing and a relatively small economic base.
So does that – sorry, go ahead.
And we are working our way through that. So the fiscal challenges of the last several years, we had to lay off over 20% of the jobs were eliminated in our city, and our workforce took a 10% pay cut. And unfortunately, we have had to address the issue of unfunded retirement costs before other cities are doing that. And
yeah.
It has taken a toll on our police department and all of our city departments. And we're all very committed to try to get back to the fiscal strength that will allow us to scale up our workforce and our city service again.
Mark, thanks for the call. Egon, on this point, because it seems like a lot of things would come together here if this could be done, because if you have more job development downtown and you bring more people there, people will feel safer, but you'll also be doing something good for the tax base, right? I mean, all of these things fit together in a way that will create a place that Mark and others might want to still be.
I think one of the things we see in cities all across the country is people's perception of safety really changes as you see a place that's full of people and more people and a greater variety of people. And so one of the things we've touched on a little bit is San Jose State University, but there's 30,000 students there, and it's increasingly becoming a residential campus. So having more of those students, yes, certainly feel safe and that perception of safety to go out, be a part of the downtown, the thousands of residents that are there, those are the ingredients that start to change the downtown. So some of these pieces we're hearing about are lingering perceptions. Yes, there's still challenges, but it's really trying to make sure that the streets are more full of people, a wide variety of people, and the city's really embracing of that to make it a place that lots of people want to be in.
You know, we began the program, I asked you each to kind of paint a word picture with word association for how you describe San Jose. So it might be interesting to hear what some of our listeners are writing about this. Downtown needs more retail, more upscale bars. There are too many pockets with seedy areas. We need more street-facing housing. Another listener tweets, past efforts to make downtown San Jose unfriendly to nightlife seem to have stuck in people's minds. Michael writes, downtown San Jose's weekday business lunch scene is great, but after dark, it's a risky proposition. Brian tweets, I'm not a fan of San Jose. It's too sterile. The entire city is like a shopping mall, and that artificial facade breeds crime as well. What do you say to those portraits that you hear people sketching in? Joe Horwittle first.
Well, I think I would agree with a number of those. I think that is what our goal is, though, is to fill in the pieces that where the little pearls are succeeding, is to then keep growing those and, you know, create those great places. Some of it is some perception issues that, you know, I've heard for 30 years that I've been here. They're just, you know, it's a reputation we're trying to turn.
A listener also writes in, one thing that all cities need are bridges and waterfronts. San Jose has neither, but it would be nice if we could develop the Guadalupe Riverfront area. And Bhavana wants to talk about water in San Jose and outdoor areas as well. So let's hear from her. Go ahead, please.
Hi. So I was hearing all these great ideas about businesses and retail and transport. And I've been to these really lovely cities like Portland and Pittsburgh, which, of course, are naturally endowed with waterfronts. But what they actually have is a much, much, much more family-friendly scene. And they have a lot of outdoor fountains for kids. And San Jose, we have this amazing summer weather, and it would be great to get more families out who would, in turn, frequent all those cafes, which we actually don't have many good ones right now. We have very, very few good family-friendly cafes, which you don't have to stand on long lines. But I was thinking, and I know we're going through a bad drought, but I was thinking if we could come up with some creative way of, you know, making it a much more family-friendly city where people would be really happy to go and hang out with their
yeah.
kids on weekends, and also attract more visitors.
Right. Thank you, Vivana. What about that? Again, I mean, Pittsburgh, of course, does have it. It has three rivers, in fact, and there's a lot that it has because of that. What can you do with that? Are there possibilities for San Jose?
I think there's certainly. I mean, there's actually two creeks that come through down to the Guadalupe, but there's a smaller one closer to Diridon. Part of what it can really be about is opening up those environments. Think of a small town like San Luis Obispo that actually turns some of the buildings around so you can go into places and sit in the back and look down at the creek. You can imagine some of the new development that happens really not turning its back to the creek, but opening it up. Another side of this is really thinking about activating the existing plazas. The caller mentioned the idea of having families come and play in fountains. Well, actually, that's what you see in Cesar Chavez Plaza. On a warm day, the fountains are going and families are there and kids are playing in it. But one of the things, one ingredient that's a little bit missing might be a cafe in the park, a restaurant in the park. And you can imagine that in a lot of the other open spaces that are in downtown to make it a place that people go and spend time in that existing public space.
A couple of people are writing in, Kim, about the sort of suburban nature of San Jose. John writes, the problem for San Jose is it started as a suburb and it developed as a suburb. And now it's just a very large suburb. And another listener writes, if only Santana Row could have been built downtown, but developed. Developer money always trumps the good of the community. Santana Row is actually kind of an interesting question. So for those who aren't familiar with it, Kim Wallace, describe it. It's what, 5 miles or so from downtown. But in some ways, it seems like the argument is not that it should have been downtown, but that you need to now make sure people can get from Santana Row to these other sort of urban hubs.
Yes, Santana Row was significant because it proved beyond a doubt that people in the South Bay will be attracted to high-quality areas that have a combination of restaurants and retail and places to live in really high-quality public space for just walking and hanging out. So Santana Row was developed because the property developer could have a single piece of property that could own and it could control, and there were no historic resources, and it was difficult, but it was a relatively simple thing to do, whereas downtown is a real place. And it proved that people here want those kind of mixed use environments. And I know people that are spending time in Santana Row and also coming downtown now, and they're very complementary to each other and should be connected at some point by fast bus rapid transit. They're both amenities, they're both in San Jose.
Again.
And that's exactly why we talk about this notion of Central San Jose, of really rethinking the geography of this place.
Yeah, I haven't really accurately or adequately described that. You're saying we ought to use different terminology. We shouldn't just think about it as downtown. We should think about it as central and sort of have a central with sort of spokes going out that encompass a larger area.
We're increasingly living in an environment where people might have a job in one place, they work in another place, and they're moving around. There's a lot of mobility. And we're investing in transit and other transportation, including bike lanes, to connect people between these places. So if we think about that geography, it is, Kim mentioned, the bus rapid transit to Santana Row and the light rail going north. That's really a piece of it. And then there are a number of historic neighborhoods that ring downtown that a lot of people like to go to and visit.
Time for a little San Jose boosterism here. So one of our listeners writes in, thank you, city planners. In the last 5 years, we've seen downtown San Jose change for the better. The biggest sign on Saturday, Japantown, San Pedro Square, and the SFOA district are filled with people who live there, enjoying the weekend. There's always room for improvement, but we are on our way. But a concern is something that Judith writes that we haven't talked about yet, and I know this is probably none of your key areas, but it's an important point. We live in downtown San Jose, Judith writes. Transit is great as a key to development, but if you really want to attract downtown residents, you've got to improve the schools. And a number of other people are posting that point on our website. Joe Horwittle, can you tackle that?
Yeah, well, that was one of the investments the Redevelopment Agency made, was to actually fund a public elementary school across the street from City Hall, Horace Mann, that with the goal of making it more attractive for families to live downtown. And, you know, we're definitely the challenges of public schools and putting a really great product out there. We have charters that are also in and around downtown that are serving the residents. But we recognize that's one of the things that, you know, to be family friendly, we've got to put a compelling, you know, educational product out there.
It's obviously a challenge, Kim Wallace, that every city faces. Every city deals with problems in terms of making its public schools be ones that families want to stick around for, as opposed to moving out to the suburbs. How are you trying to face that?
Yeah, schools are essential, and San Jose actually has one of the top-ranked urban school districts in the nation. But as you can imagine, we want to be strong when compared to the communities around us. So the mayor of San Jose has been involved through the City Schools Collaborative. We are supporting the improvements in the public schools to close the sort of the racial and ethnic gap in achievement, taking that very seriously. At the same time, encouraging charter schools and private schools and a lot of options for city center residents.
How does that part of this challenge, how is that something that San Jose has to contend with, Egon? In other words, you're next door to Palo Alto, to Mountain View, to any number of other communities that have strong public schools that also have strong little downtowns. Palo Alto is a nice little downtown. So does Menlo Park, Redwood City, Mountain View. They're each their own little unit. How do you contend with that?
Well, I think that's the reality of the Bay Area, that we live in a place with 100 cities and a lot of people have very strong identity associated with their cities. I think one of the assets that San Jose brings that we haven't touched on is the fact that it's really embracing of growth and change, that right now we have a regional plan that was passed last year to have the Bay Area grow by 2 million people, add 1 million jobs, and a lot of those places that might have these nice downtowns and have a pretty strong economy aren't as embracing of growth or as willing to change. And San Jose, I think, is uniquely, not uniquely in the whole region, but certainly in the South Bay, is very embracing of that growth, particularly in downtown. And that's an asset that's going to grow over time.
It's true. I mean, there are big debates right now in several mid-peninsula communities. Menlo Park, where I grew up and live, you know, big debate about, do we really want to grow this much? Do we really want to add all this housing? So fair point. Neil in Palo Alto wants to join our conversation. Neil, you're on.
More when we were talking about transportation rather than San Jose itself as a city. And my question is for any of your guests on San Jose or any city in general, whether their transportation models take into account what I'll call working soccer moms or working soccer dads, because no matter how great the transportation is, it seems if you have kids, you have to take your car to pick them up from daycare or whatnot, and whether smart planning for transportation sort of writes these people off, and I don't mean that in a bad way, and they're focusing on the under 30s with no kids or the working dad who has a mom who's a stay-at-home mom, or whether there is an effort to try to take that into account, because I think that's a huge part of the demographic up and down the peninsula of two working parents who, no matter how great the transportation is, they're getting in their car because they have school, daycare, soccer, et cetera.
So do you mean, Neil, having more connection opportunities so that from the train station there's quick bus to various schools or something that would make even using public transportation more plausible for someone in your situation?
Whether that's in the plan or whether your panelists and people like them say, look, we're not going to capture that group. We're not going to even try to go after that. And our transportation models are for the childless or the working person who doesn't deal with the kids. I know some families are like that. But
yeah, okay. Kim Wallace.
Well, I think that, first of all, it's important to understand the demographics, and working parents are a really important part of the community, but less than half of the households have children under 18 living at home these days. So I think we need to recognize that transit is not for all trips, and working parents, unfortunately, are probably still going to need to drive their kids around unless they're in a situation where their kids can bike or walk to school. We're really looking at what portion of the daily needs that we all have can be served by walking to a commercial district nearby or living closer to where you work, which is why we just built nearly 8,000 new housing units in North San Jose. So you've got 8,000 people who can be closer to the technology companies that are there. And by the way, there is land now for a new school that is being built to serve that growing neighborhood.
So, but it sounds like, again, that Neil has a valid concern, would like to be able to use public transit, just doesn't make a lot of sense in his circumstance. And Kim is essentially saying that's kind of the way it has to be.
Well, I think it really depends on where one's job is, where you live. If there's childcare in the neighborhood you live in or a school in the neighborhood you live in, you can certainly drop your child off at that and then hop on a bus or a train to get to work. I live in an urban environment. I have two children, and we get around on transit and bicycling. And I think some of it is a choice, but it's making sure that some of the places you need to get to are convenient to those environments. So absolutely, I mean, Neil, to your question, it's not a vision that's trying to write off a population at all. I mean, it's trying to make some of those decisions much easier for people to make, and it really will affect where we locate childcare as a piece of it, as well as schools and homes.
Neil, thanks for the call.
Can I jump in on that one a little bit?
Yeah, go ahead, John.
As a part of where we went with our general plan, we used a phrase, complete neighborhoods, and it was really recognizing you're not going to get everybody on transit. You know, we're just trying to get up to, like, you know, 10, 20, 30% over time.
Yeah.
But it's giving choices so that people don't have to, they're not forced to drive everywhere, that they have the ability to do that in their neighborhood. And then they make a choice about what they want to do.
Yep. Philippe, you're on. Quick last comment, if you would, because we're short on time.
Hello, Felipe?
Yeah, go ahead, Felipe.
Oh, yeah. Hi, I just want to address all the haters about San Jose who keep putting up their own self-obstacles. The VTA, the weather, the transportation, the schools, the safety. These are all obstacles that people put in front of themselves. These are not actual, factual obstacles. I went from having three cars to having three bicycles and three kids. I get around the entire San Jose and my three bikes, three kids on a trailer. You know, the thing about that lady in San Francisco said, oh, San Jose's not safe, but I don't go out in San Francisco at 3 in the morning. I go running at 3 in the morning in downtown San Jose.
Okay,
right,
thank
I
you.
Ride my bicycle. Also, the waterfront, we have...
I'm going to hold you there, Felipe. It's great. I love your 3x3x3. Thank you for giving us that. Closing thoughts from each of you. And let me go back to my word association and ask you each to describe the San Jose that you'd like to see a dozen years from now. Quickly, Joe.
Just a great livable downtown.
Kim Wallish.
Key asset for Silicon Valley and the Bay Area.
And Egon Turplin.
One of the greatest biking places in the country, a place of great transit environment, and really a destination that people choose to go to all throughout the Bay Area.
You should get Felipe to write an addendum to your report.
Absolutely.
For sure.
All right. Thanks all very much. Fascinating discussion.
You.
We'll have to watch how this continues to go and grow over the years ahead. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Amanda Stupai is our engagement producer. And Amanda, by the way, is put a link to the Spur report on our website, as well as some various images from the report where you can get a better handle on what we've been talking about for this past hour. Thanks all very much for being part of our program. Forum continues in just a moment. We're going to take up the deadline that's coming, March the 31st, Obamacare. Sign up. We'll talk about it in just a moment.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.